Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Today on CityCast Houston, we're known for our medical center and healthcare innovations in H-Town, but recent headlines about Black maternal mortality rates and entire transplant departments being shut down because of a doctor's wrongdoing have me asking, what the heck is going on at the Med Center? Houston Chronicle Health reporter Julian Gill and Dr. Erica Giwa of Legacy Community Health join me to answer that pressing question. It's Monday, April 22nd. I'm Raheel Ramzanali, and here's what Houston's talking about. Julian, welcome into CityCast Houston. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, Raheel.
Absolutely. Now, the reason I brought you on is because I need your help here. So, I've seen some wild headlines, and then I've seen these wild headlines. Memorial Hermann stops their kidney and liver transplant programs. Then we see another headline that the doctor over there was accused of manipulating a transplant database. Like, what is going on? Give me a summary of what exactly happened and a timeline of it all.
Yeah, a lot has happened. I think some people might have whiplash, and there's still a lot we don't know. So I'm happy to clarify kind of where we started. So a couple weeks ago on April 4th, local media began reporting that Memorial Hermann was stopping liver transplants. They said they had inactivated their liver transplant program over irregularities with their donor acceptance criteria. And let me explain what donor acceptance criteria is, because I feel like this term keeps on getting shared and we haven't really, people may not know what it is. So when a patient gets put on a transplant waiting list, they get ranked in a national database based on a lot of factors, but primarily based on how sick they are. So the sickest patients generally get higher priority. Doctors can also decide what kinds of donor organs they'll accept for each one of those patients. And for that, they take into account things like the weight and height of the donor and whether or not that donor organ will be compatible with the recipient, their patient. Mm. So that's where Memorial Hermann said they found problems, that donor acceptance criteria that they established to determine what donor organs are good for their patients. And that criteria is different across different hospitals. So this is unique to Memorial Hermann, their criteria. So that happened on April 4th. Liver transplant program shut down. Not a lot of information about why or what happened. Then the situation escalated on April 9th when the hospital announced it would stop kidney transplants because the liver and kidney programs had the same leadership. So they said the problems were with the liver program, but the kidney program also had to stop because it had the same leadership structure is how they phrased it. And, hundreds of people were suddenly impacted. The kidney program had 346 patients on the waitlist at the time, while the liver program had 38. And their liver program, just by the way, is one of the smaller liver programs in Texas. So then a few days later, this New York Times story comes out that said the hospital found evidence that a doctor was changing patient information, basically making it impossible for patients to receive an organ. And the Times identified that doctor as Dr. Steve Bynan, who's been the chief of abdominal transplants at UT Health and Memorial Hermann since 2011. So, and I want to be clear, the hospital confirmed to us the broad strokes of that account, that an internal investigation confirmed a doctor, in their words, made inappropriate changes to donor acceptance criteria in this database that essentially made patients inactive. But the hospital declined to identify the doctor to us and to other media. And so far, we've not been able to independently confirm that doctor's identity.
Wow. Tell me more about Dr. Bynan. Like, how did he prevent some patients from receiving life-saving organs? He was literally just going in and making these criteria pretty much impossible to meet. Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, I want to be clear. The only source that has identified Dr. Bynan is the New York Times and their reporting. So I'm speaking based on their reporting and their identification of the doctor. But
okay.
But basically, you know, stopping liver and kidney transplants means, you know, nearly 400 people will have to get a transplant somewhere else. And wow. your understanding is correct that this evidence that Memorial Hermann found in this investigation determined that the changes that this physician made to the donor acceptance criteria basically made people inactive. And in the Times report, they provided an example in their story that said, you know, it was, a 300-pound toddler was one of the donor acceptance criteria, that he would, you know, take organs from a 300-pound toddler, which obviously, you know, doesn't exist. So that would make it impossible for somebody to receive that organ.
How many people died because of his actions?
You know, it's hard to determine in just in general whether changes to criteria prevented a specific patient from getting a specific organ at, you know, at any point in time. I mean, that's just, there are a lot of factors that go into organ matching and, you know, into donor acceptance criteria. So I don't know at this moment of anyone who has, you know, missed out on an organ because of these changes.
So obviously this is something that will be investigated. Is Dr. Bynon under investigation right now?
These problems are definitely under investigation. And the doctor that, you know, made these changes to the database is part of that. So the hospital has told me that they were still in the early stages of its investigation. They've not released any updates since then when we've asked. So it's very much still in flux, and it's not just an internal investigation. It's federal investigators are involved as well. Federal regulators, that includes CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and HRSA, the Health Resources and Services Administration, which both of those agencies are the regulators for the U.S. transplant system.
Yeah, good to hear that there are some external sources investigating this, because the initial statement from UT Health basically defended Dr. Bynon, right? Like, really spoke on his great record and everything. I was blown away by that. Like, they're defending him. I know there's still an investigation internally they have to do, but were you kind of shocked by that as well?
I wouldn't say I was surprised. You're right. UT Health came out in strong support of Dr. Bynon. They said he was, you know, caring, talented, and a pioneering surgeon. You know, and you know, I also want to mention this doctor has had supporters. You know, I've spoken to one of his colleagues at University of Alabama, Birmingham. You know, he told me he was a longtime friend of his. There was another one of his colleagues in the transplant division who spoke to the New York Times and, you know, said he was a talented surgeon. You know, so I don't know. I don't know if I can say I was surprised at the statement. I think we have to wait to see what comes out, and then we can kind of make judgments.
With the patients, let's talk about them. The patients who were on the list to receive a liver or kidney transplant, that program, as we mentioned, is now gone. What happens to them?
So when the transplant program becomes inactivated, you can go to another transplant program and get on their list. You can transfer over and still keep the time that you spent, the time that you accrued on the waiting list. That's still factored in when you move to another program. The tricky part is different programs have different criteria of who they will allow on their waiting list. And obviously the donor acceptance criteria may be different. So it's not going to be the exact same situation. You know, I think there could be a scenario where, you know, one patient from Memorial Hermann doesn't qualify for another hospital's wait list. But in general, patients are going to have to go elsewhere to get a liver or kidney transplant.
Let's talk about other cases like this, right? This one has obviously been making a lot of national news. And I was just wondering, have we seen something like this in other states or cities happen with a doctor of this, you know, high regard?
That's something that me and my colleague, Evan McDonald, are looking into. But based on the public statements and the way it's been described so far, that a doctor manipulated transplant information in a way that prevented patients from receiving an organ, that's highly unusual. Mm. You know, in our research and conversations with sources, we've not been able to find any precedent for it. You know, I think there have been surgeons who have been accused of wrongdoing in the transplant system, I mean, and it's largely been, you know, inappropriately moving patients up on the list to get organs. But I haven't really heard of anything like this.
One last question. With all of your reporting, at the Houston Chronicle and covering this medical beat, have there been other stories or areas of medicine that you feel like should get more attention or that you found disturbing that people need to pay more attention to?
Recently, my reporting has kind of taken me to the adoption space, where, you know, Texas has, we found, funded an adoption marketing campaign throughout the state that includes, you know, billboards that you can see in Houston, and radio advertisements, lots of digital advertisements for this modern adoption campaign that I spoke to many experts, and they say it presents a oversimplified, misleading picture of adoption. The state is paying a lot of money, but to basically tell people, young women and girls with unplanned pregnancies, that, you know, instead of getting an abortion, you can put your baby up for adoption. And it's saying that that's an empowering choice. That's an empowering decision. You know, obviously, given the fallout of, you know, Texas abortion laws and the fact that, you know, it's likely that many more people will have unplanned pregnancies in the state, that's obviously more urgent now. Texas has recognized that, or at least the organizer of this marketing campaign has recognized that. So we've reported basically on, you know, how this campaign has, you know, been just painting a very oversimplified picture, as I said earlier, of adoption. There are a lot of concerns among adoption ethics experts, you know, former adoptees, birth mothers, who say that this could mislead people into relinquishing their child.
Julian, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Rahil. I appreciate you having me.
Coming up next, Dr. Erica Giwa to discuss the maternal mortality rates amongst Black women. Houston's original neighborhood downtown is for everyone, and it's poppin'. It's our open-hearted home for our biggest celebrations and our treasured hidden gems. From the world-class theater district to incredible green spaces like Discovery Green, downtown is the place to be. In fact, more people visited downtown Houston last year than the entire population of Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, and San Antonio combined. There's no better time to live downtown than now. From starter apartments to luxury lofts, everyone can take advantage of the arts, business, culture, entertainment, food, and recreation. Now, you might think of downtown as only the heartbeat of Houston's regional economy, which it is, but there's so much more to it, including free events throughout the week with Downtown Houston Plus. From the Market Square Park Farmers Market every Saturday to Yoga Flow every Wednesday, you can find something to do and eat and watch in downtown Houston. Learn more at downtownhouston.org. Downtown Houston, get energized and revived. Dr. Giwa, welcome into CityCast Houston. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, I'm so excited to learn about what is happening in our healthcare system. So let's start with this big thing, right? Harris County is one of the worst counties in the nation when it comes to Black maternal mortality rates. Can you explain these tragic numbers and how Black moms are dying?
So we've known for some time now that Texas had and has an unacceptably high rate of maternal morbidity and mortality. And so when we look at Harris County, we're definitely outliers in that. And before I go into the numbers, I really want to just level set for all the listeners and make sure we understand what maternal mortality is. So the CDC defines maternal mortality as any death during pregnancy or 42 days after pregnancy. So when we look at the numbers, in Harris County, the rate of deaths was 18.1 per 100,000 live births. So that's how we always look at deaths, per 100,000 live births. We saw that decrease to 16.7 per 100,000 live births in 2019, but still not where we want to be. I know that we just completed Black Maternal Health Week, and I do want to say this is a global problem. It's not just Black moms, but the reason we focus on Black moms is because when we look at the stats, although all the stats are high, Black moms are bearing the burden of this mortality. Black women are 2 to 3 times more likely to experience morbidity and mortality when compared to their white and Hispanic counterparts. So those are the reasons that we're focusing on Harris County, and those are the reasons that we're focusing on Black moms.
Is this an issue just impacting Black moms, or is this all people of color? I know you just brought up Hispanic moms as well. What do we know about just in terms of people of color?
You know, it's all people of color. It's all women. It's really impacting all women. Mm. But the interesting fact is when we look at Hispanic moms, the numbers still aren't as high as African-American moms. Gotcha. And so there's really a disparity when we look particularly at the African-American community.
Why is this happening, right? This is Houston. We are the epicenter of medicine. We have one of the best medical centers, if not the best medical center in the nation. Why? What the heck is happening?
You know, I wish there was an easy answer to that question. I wish there was. And, you know, when we look at maternal morbidity and mortality, it's multifactorial. There's so many things that are going into these numbers. And I really like to tease out the morbidity piece, mm-hmm. Because I think we always focus on who the moms that are dying, but morbidity is important too. So when we're looking at moms who are pregnant, severe maternal morbidity are those moms who are having really severe hypertension, readmission to the hospitals, blood transfusions, anything that's going to cause a really severe complication in your pregnancy. So for every one maternal death, there are 100 of those cases.
Wow.
So as a medical community, we're really focusing on what is causing the morbidity in our community, particularly, as you say, because we're in Harris County, we're in Houston, Texas. This is the best medical center in the nation. So some of the things that we're focusing on are increasing access to healthcare. That's a big deal. You know, it doesn't matter if you have like the hugest medical center in the world. If you can't get in to see your doctor, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
So we're focusing on access. At Legacy, we see patients before they're insured, while their insurance is processing. And that's the reason, because we want to get moms in to get the care that they need.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up regarding the health insurance, the access to go see a doctor. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a friend, and I'm going to share a personal story, who passed away after she gave birth about a month later. And she had great health insurance. She mm-hmm. had everything, like had a great support system, all that stuff, right? And she was also a victim.
Yeah.
So I can't even imagine for families that don't have the best care, right? Like what they're going through. Is this systemic? Is this racism? Like, what is it?
Well, let me tell you what we're hearing, particularly from Black moms. Black moms are saying that their concerns are not being heard. And so this is something that is independent of having insurance or not. You know, if we have a system that is biased, that's a problem. And so if we're not listening to our patients, then we can't care for them appropriately.
Let's talk about the babies. How mm-hmm. are these infants doing? Are there numbers suggesting that they're dying at alarming rates as well when it comes to Black babies?
So what we look at with babies, maternal morbidity and mortality and infant morbidity and mortality and preterm delivery, that's all related. When you have a mom who experiences increased morbidity in pregnancy, the rate of preterm delivery increases, the rate of infant mortality increases. Mm. So in nationally, we see the rate of preterm birth at 10.4%. In Texas, it is 11.3%. In Harris County, it is 12.5%. So we are not doing well in this category at all.
Let's talk about prevention, because I saw a number that 80% of the deaths with the Black maternal mortality rates were mm-hmm. preventable. What mm-hmm. can we do to change this? What can we do to prevent this from happening in the future?
So, you know, I'm really happy to say that we're already doing some of these things.
Oh, good.
One of the things that we noticed, you know, for years when we were looking at maternal morbidity and mortality, particularly mortality, a lot of the mortality is occurring after delivery. So this is mom has her baby, she goes home, has a complication, and then she's experiencing maternal death. And so one of the things that we really fought hard for as a community is to extend Medicaid. 50% of moms who deliver in Texas are covered by Medicaid. So that's substantial. Previously, Medicaid would end at 2 months. Now it's 12 months. Mm. So that's amazing. That's a huge win for our community. And it gives our moms the opportunity to continue care after delivery. So when we have moms who have hypertension, diabetes, cardiac disease, they can continue to receive care for up to 12 months after delivery. So that's going to help us prevent a lot of deaths.
With that care, what exactly comes with postpartum care? Because if you haven't had a baby in your family, I don't think people understand how important that extra 10 months, right? Bumping it from 2 months to 12 mm-hmm. months is, because that is such a huge burden of relief for moms.
Huge. So postpartum, you know, we have worked really hard for people to understand the importance. I'm glad that you understand it.
Yes.
That's a huge win. So we actually started calling the postpartum period the fourth trimester, so that people don't put a period at the end. Like when the baby's born, you're like, we're done. So in the postpartum period, moms need to make sure that they're healing appropriately. If they've had C-section, even if you've had vaginal delivery, that they're not having breastfeeding complications, they're not having mental health concerns. And so many of our moms do have comorbidities. A lot of our moms are waiting later to have children. And so you have that increased rate of diabetes, hypertension. And in the past, it was really hard, even as a clinician, because at 2 months, it's like, what can I do for you? You don't have any coverage. So now that's not a problem anymore.
Dr. Giwa, I'm glad you brought up postpartum care. Let's talk about this, because it is so different, right, when it comes to moms who have just delivered a baby, and if they have to go to the ER or if they need to call somebody urgently, like what is being done to help them when there are urgent matters?
So one of the things that we noticed, you know, as a combined medical team is, you know, our mom will call in and say, I'm experiencing symptom, you know, my blood pressure is higher, I'm having headache. And usually we'll say, go into the emergency room. And so they're not pregnant anymore, so they're going to go to the main emergency room. And when that mom presents, it's important for the doctor to understand that she's postpartum. And so high blood pressure, if I have a blood pressure 160 over 110 and I did not have a baby, that is very different than if I did just have a baby.
Oh.
So now a lot of doctors are having their patients wear bracelets that say, I am postpartum. So if they have to present to the emergency room, the doctor knows, okay, this high blood pressure is preeclampsia. I need to treat this differently than someone who is, you know, remote from having a baby. I'll just give her high, you know, a tablet of blood pressure medication. This postpartum mom, I'm going to admit.
Last year, Harris County granted $1.4 million to fight Black maternal mortality rates. Do you know what that money was allocated towards? Has that helped in terms of decreasing these numbers? Any thoughts on that?
So, you know, I don't know if you've ever worked with anyone and you had to get data, but data takes a long time. So,
yes. Yes.
So, you know, we don't have any data yet, but definitely anecdotally, I can see a huge change in just the way that we approach moms. We understand that moms need more support. So a lot of the funding has gone towards programs that fund doulas, which is amazing, that have funded community health workers that will go out to mom's house, do blood pressure measurements and things like that. New York implemented similar programs many years ago, and they saw a decrease in their numbers. So we're expecting to see the same thing in Texas.
Yeah, and I also saw that Harris County created the Maternal Health Bill of Rights, right? Mm-hmm. So hopefully that's going to help. And it's funny you bring up the data that comes with research, right? I actually reached out to Professor Langa at University of Houston. She's doing a huge study nationwide. And she mm-hmm. was telling me as well, like, I really want to talk about these numbers, but I can't. There's just, we have so much information coming in. So hopefully we'll see some positive trends here.
I think we will.
Okay. For women that are out there, Dr. Giwa, who are mm-hmm. thinking about having children one day or are currently pregnant, which congratulations, what advice would you give them in order to make sure they have a safe delivery, postpartum care as well?
So for moms considering pregnancy, I always tell women that I don't believe the pregnancy starts when you get that pregnancy test. If you're thinking about pregnancy, go see your doctor before. Establish a relationship with an OB-GYN, someone that you feel comfortable with. Make sure that if you have comorbidities, that those are kind of teed up, that you're the healthiest version of yourself before you get pregnant. And once you're pregnant, make sure that the provider that you've chosen is someone that you feel like you can collaborate with. When I trained, medicine was a little different. And so now we understand that medicine is a collaborative process. So I'm not dictating everything. I'm not telling you everything. We're doing this together. So make sure that you've chosen someone that you feel like you can work with. And then also have a village around you to support you through that pregnancy, delivery, and postpartum process. That's so important.
All right. Finally, before I let you go, as a doctor, you're seeing patients, you are talking to them, you're witnessing the healthcare disparities for people of color. What other things stand out? Where else can we improve?
Wow. I think that as a community, we have to understand, really understand what's impacting the Black community. And one of those things is bias. And so as a community, if we don't acknowledge that, then we can't correct it. And so I think that's where we need to really move. But that's hard. It's hard. Yeah. I acknowledge that, but that's where we need to really move.
Dr. Giwa, thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
That was Dr. Erica Giwa of Legacy Community Health and Houston Chronicle health reporter Julian Gill. Before we go, what other health-related stories do you want us to cover? Share your ideas with the contact info in our show notes. That will do it for today. Thank you for listening, and I hope you learned something new. That was weird. I was like, man, my internet just went out, but it was everyone.